You experience herbs every day. You see them, you smell them, you eat them. Life would be pretty bland without them. Now, it's time to sit back, relax, and talk about them with Ann McCormick, the herb and cowgirl who's at home with herbs on The Word today.
And good afternoon on this nice, bright, hot June day. I'm here in the studio with Dustin Briscoe, my sound engineer, and today I've got Janice Bunting helping out with calls. Looking forward to having your calls later in the show. I also have a special guest, which I'll mention in a little bit. That's a surprise for later. But today is the 21st of June, and that may just seem like any other Saturday, but it is the summer solstice. And that, if you're an astronomy buff or anybody who's interested in weather, you know that that is when the longest day of the year is. This is when the sun is as far north as it possibly can be. And so we're going to be talking about Midsummer Madness is my theme for the day. We're going to talk in the first segment about what it means in your garden to have the sun this far to the north. Then in the second and third segment, we're going to have a surprise guest here. And then in the fourth segment, I'd planned on talking a little bit about making herbal spritzers to keep you cool during the hot part of the summer, which is going to be upon us very soon. Now, as I said, we are going to be taking calls during the show. I had a friend of mine earlier today actually pointing out that some people might be a little uncomfortable about talking on the radio. So if you have a question that you'd like to ask, but you'd rather not be on the air, just tell the caller, the call screener, when you call in what your question is, and that you'll just take your answer off the air, and we'll be happy to have that transferred to me, and then we'll answer your questions, and you can remain anonymous there. So just keep that in mind. Now, for all callers that do call in today, we have two things we're going to be giving. You'll be eligible for a drawing for either tickets to Concerts in the Garden on Sunday, June 29th, which is a $36 value, and two tickets for the lawn area for the Concerts in the Garden, or a copy of my cookbook, The Urban Cowgirl Bakes. So be sure and call in, give your name and number, and enter into that drawing. Well, as I said, this is the summer solstice, and today is when the sun is the farthest north in the sky. And what that means is that this is the beginning of the really hot days. This actually, as it turns out, the way God has made the world, the longest day is not the hottest day, because it actually takes time for the heat to build up from the hot days that we're getting all the maximum sun right now. That's why August is really the hottest day, because it sort of builds up, even though the days are already starting to shorten and edge their way towards fall. But this is a perfect time to do something I like to tell people about, called shadow mapping. Now, shadow mapping is getting out and making a drawing of where the shadows are in your garden. Now, that sounds dull and boring, I know, but trust me, you're going to find some surprises when you do that. Well, how important is it to know where the shadows are in the garden? Well, some of your plants are full sun plants, and some of your plants are full shade, and if you put them in the wrong spot, you're going to lose them. And boy, I've certainly done that over the years. One of the sayings I like to tell people, especially new gardeners, is that behind every successful gardener is a trail of dead plant bodies that you have killed from one form or another. And half the time, it's probably from poor watering, but another part of the time, it's because you just didn't plant it where it should be. If the plant needs full sun, you need to have it in a place where it's not going to be in the shadows. And so you need to know where those shadows go. And it changes during the year, because the sun not only goes from east to west day to day, but it gradually moves to the north, and then it gradually comes back down to the south. And that means all of your shadows are gradually shifting. And it's surprising how much it will shift. The farther north you are, the more radical it is. But even here in Texas, it can be very significant. So this is how you check it. Today or any day similar to that. Right now, it's sunny where I am, and hopefully where you are too, so this would be a perfect time. When the show is over, go outside and take a look to see where the shadows are in the afternoon. And then if you can, tomorrow or the following day, tomorrow you might very well be in church and that won't work, but the following day if you can check it in the morning, and that'll show you the range of your shadows on this day when you have the most sun. Ideally, if you have a map of your property, this would be a good time also to mark it down. Actually, what I encourage people to do is get a map of your property. If you have the paperwork from when you purchased your home, oftentimes there is a drawing of the property that shows where the easements are and where the utilities are, things of that nature. That's a really accurate drawing, and that's a good way of using that as the basis for this. And I did that when we first moved into our home here in Texas. And I took the map, and on the summer solstice, I went outside at 10 o'clock and at noon and at 2 p.m., and I used three different colored pencils so I could keep track of which one was which. So, you can, you know, like the red pencil was the 10 a.m. and the green pencil was noon and the blue pencil was 2 p.m. And you make a note where the shadows are falling. It's also helpful for you to note on there anything, as I put it, anything that's taller than yourself that will cast a shadow, like a tree, a very tall bush, your neighbor's fence. Even if, for instance, even if it's not on your property, we have neighbors that have some 20, 30-foot trees that when you're taking a look at it, obviously their shadow is going to impact my garden, so I need to know where that is. Then you put this map aside, and then when you get to what's known as the equinox, either the spring or the fall equinox. Now, the equinox, you heard the word equa. Those of you who know a little bit of Latin will know that that means equal. The equinox is when the days and the daytime and the nighttime are the same amount of hours in the day and the night. In the equinox, it's approximately September 22nd, roughly, and I think around March 21st, 22nd. And both times of the year, the morning, the nighttime is as long as the daytime. That's going to be your midpoint where those shadows have moved. And then you can go out, and again with a new map, and map where it is at 10 a.m., at noon, and at 2 p.m. Then you will really have a much more accurate view of what's in shade and what's in sun in your garden. What I have found with a lot of gardeners that I've worked with is that most of the time they go out to garden at a certain time of the day. Saturday mornings, for instance. So they know quite well what's in sun on Saturday morning, but they might not remember what's in sun on Saturday afternoon, or the differences maybe between what it is during the summer when they're more out in the garden more and what it is in the winter. And so sometimes that means that they can make mistakes. Let me give you an example. I once gave a native Texas plant to a friend of mine. They had admired in my garden. I said, sure, I'll dig up a portion and pass it on to you. And they planted it in a spot that they assured me was in full sun. But it was actually it was in a sort of a pie-shaped section between the house and a fence. And it was in full sun probably about an hour a day, which meant that the plant didn't last very long, and my friend was unfortunately surprised that it did not stay very long in his garden, I'm sorry to say. But that's an example of what, if you're out at a certain time of day and it always looks sunny there, you think everything's fine. So you really need to think about the times when you're not necessarily out there, and also the difference between the summer and the winter. I'm not living in a place that has a lot of trees, but I once lived on a piece of property that had, in a quarter acre, 17 deciduous trees, plus a few evergreens, which meant that I had very little direct sunlight. But in the winter, there was a lot of sun because the leaves were off the trees. So it's helpful to have, to have a map of the summer solstice and the winter solstice, which, again, the winter solstice is the opposite of the summer. That's when we're farthest from the sun and we get the least amount of sunlight, and then something at the equinox. Now, I've gone very quickly through what I describe as shadow mapping. I have a more detailed article on this that I'm going to be including in my next newsletter. So if you want to take a look at that, you can go on my website, ann-mccormick.com, and that's Ann without an E. And sign up for my newsletter. I'm planning on having that about twice a month. It'll include elements from the programs as we go along, as well as a few other things. Look forward to having you sign up, and I'll, as I said, in the next one, it'll include the information on shadow mapping. But anyway, this is something you ought to consider doing, since this is a perfect time of the year. Stay with us, and we're just about ready to go. On our next segment, we'll have our surprise guest I'm looking forward to introducing to you. Talk to you then. Welcome back to At Home with Herbs on KWRD. This is Ann McCormick, the Urban Cowgirl, and I have the pleasure of introducing a friend of mine, somebody I'm proud to call a friend, Dottie Woodson of the AgriLife Extension, which is part of...
It's part of Texas A&M.
Texas University. A&M, that's right. And Dottie has been... someone I have admired and been glad to know ever since I came here to Texas, and she's been well known in the Tarrant County area. She was originally an extension agent there, and she's moved on up the ladder. And we decided to share her with the rest of you. And her responsibilities now cover all of the entire Metroplex. But Dottie is an expert on all things gardening, and definitely herbs as well. I know she grows some herbs in her garden.
Oh yeah,
and I'm just glad to have you here today. Before we get into the main topic, just tell me a few of the herbs that you enjoy growing in your garden.
Well, I love having rosemary in the garden because, number one, it makes the garden very aromatic. Anytime I rub against it or walk near it or water it or anything, it releases all that wonderful fragrance into the air. I've got a lot of other herbs, culinary herbs, that I like to use. Mm-hmm. You know, thyme, oregano, sage. Mm-hmm. I have all of that. Oh, and sweet basil. I have some other basils too, but I love to add sweet basil to a lot of the things that I cook with.
Yes.
I have some fennel. I have some dill, you know, things mm-hmm. like that I love to use.
Well, if you have dill, you'll have dill in your garden for the rest of your life.
Well,
I know you know that.
I try to deadhead it before it does that.
Ah, yeah, because dill, for those of you who haven't had the chance to grow dill, it seeds out very easily, and the birds love it.
Yes.
It's great little seeds for the birds, but that also means the birds are happy to be spreading it around your garden.
Yeah, I cut the seed heads off and put them in a paper bag and let them disperse in the paper bag, and that way I can share them with everyone else, or use the seeds as an herb also.
Right, because the dill seed as well as the leaves are good on that.
Yeah.
Well, Dottie, as we both, I'm sure, noticed when we came to the studio, it is hot out there, hot and humid.
It is very hot. You were talking about shadowing earlier in the show, and I want you to know a lot of times I'll go out to my garden early in the morning, and I will actually start at the furthest end of the garden where I know the sun is going to start hitting first as the morning comes on.
That's true.
And then I actually follow that shade all the way across my garden.
Smart
until
woman.
The garden is in full sun. So I like to get out there real early, start on that one side, and then just work my way as the shade moves across the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I'm protecting myself from the heat as well as from
the
sun.
That's true. Yes, I do something similar. My mother is my master weeder, I like to call her. You know, some people have master gardeners. My mother is the master weeder around our home. And she's in her 80s, so she really needs to watch out with the heat. But yes, she and I both are. And if we can schedule the eastern side of the house during the evening when it's in shadow, for instance, if we can manage to do that, that certainly makes it better.
And then also wear a big, gigantic brimmed hat.
Ah,
long sleeves. And take lots of breaks when the heat gets.
Oh, yes. And lots of water. Very definitely. Well, Dottie, a number of our listeners are gardeners and know that the heat is something they have to do to some things to protect their garden if they can, or to manage it, especially, you know, with the hot weather. Last year we had a lot of rain, but we might not have so much this year.
Right.
So what would you consider to be one of the number one things that they can do to cope with that heat as we're about to get it?
Well, we talked about us protecting ourselves from the heat, but of course the plants are out there and they're stuck there. So you know, we have to do something to help them.
Yes.
And one of the things I always recommend, and one of the number one things I help, I think can help protect the plants, is mulch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bark mulch. A mm-hmm. bark mulch is you put it over the soil around mm-hmm. your plants, and this helps retain the water in the soil, which helps moderates the temperature mm-hmm. in the root zone. It really, really helps the plants much more than anything else I can think of. I mean, everyone thinks in terms of watering, watering, watering. Well, you right. know, we have clay soil, and clay soil, once it is wet, takes a long time to get rid of that water.
Mm-hmm.
And plants are roots are optimistic. They will actually go where the water is.
Yes,
so if we get the soil water deeply,
uh-huh.
the water's there. The roots will grow down to that. But the surface of the soil, because of solar radiation, because of the wind that blows, you know, it's going to dry out the fastest. And a lot of our water-absorbing and food-absorbing, nutrient-absorbing roots are right there at the surface.
Yeah, don't the agriculturists call those the feeder roots?
Right, the feeder roots.
At the top,
exactly.
I guess the first two layers of the soil?
Well, about the first 6 inches
oh, that
our
deep.
Area.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
So we want to target to water 6 inches or deeper.
Okay.
And the rain this spring has really done that for us. I don't think I've irrigated but once, you know, since last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a wonderful thing that has this rain, but once mm-hmm. the rain stops and we have to start thinking in
Step
terms
in.
Of irrigating and
yeah.
keeping the water in the soil as long as possible. It's what we call evapotranspiration. The
Ooh.
Water
50-cent word meaning.
The water evaporates from the soil, and the plants are using the water, and they transpire water through their leaves.
Mm-hmm.
There's openings in the underside of the leaves called stomata. And
mm-hmm.
these stomata open and close to release this water, which is a byproduct of photosynthesis.
So those are almost like the pores in our skin.
They're like the pores in our skin, exactly.
Has the same function, I guess. And so, well, it does it cool the plant, or is it just a way of releasing excess liquid?
Well, of course, as water evaporates, it has a cooling
it
effect.
It would, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It also is where the gaseous exchange occurs.
Uh-huh.
Carbon dioxide goes in and oxygen is released.
Okay, so it's breathing and sweating.
Right. And as the temperature rises,
uh-huh.
they sweat more water, release more water.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And as the wind blows and as the humidity drops. So those three factors have a great deal to do with transpiration. But at the same time, with evaporation of water from the soil. So
okay.
if we put a bark mulch layer on the soil, we can sort of slow that evaporation down.
The evaporation out of the ground.
Water, out of the ground where the roots
right.
are.
Right, right. Where the roots are.
That's what we call the root zone.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
Because the roots are, I guess, kind of like the mouth in some ways. I mean,
well, I like to say they're sort of like the end of the soda straw.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a good description.
So the
yeah.
soda straw at the bottom of our milkshake or soda is where the water is going to come
uh-huh.
in. And let's say that's the roots.
Yeah.
And so the roots are absorbing water as fast as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And the straw is like a column of water all the way from the tip of the root to the opening on the underside of the leaf called the stomata.
That's
And that
right.
column of water is always full because of transpiration, respiration, and photosynthesis. And so what happens in the heat of the day, a lot of times, the stomata start closing up to reduce that loss of water.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we see that happening in our landscape and we get very alarmed. A lot of people come home from work at 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the heat of the summer and they'll go, oh my gosh, I need to water everything. Herbaceous plants are wilted. The grass blades have sort of actually closed themselves up because they're a two rank leaf and they have that capability.
Right.
The grass will look grayish instead of green. And when this happens, this is the plant trying to stop that loss of water.
Well, you're talking about what I think of as it looks like the plant has fainted, where
exactly.
the top portion just
exactly.
kind of flops over.
It's pinching its straw is what it's doing.
Yes, yeah. The straw isn't keeping up with the amount of
right.
water that's going
right.
out.
So it's pinching its straw
yeah.
trying to reduce that loss of water because the roots are finite. They
mm-hmm.
can only take up so much water at a time. If we water more, that's not going to help.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if we water more, we might overlove our plants.
Yes.
And put too much water in the soil. The oxygen will be lost from the soil, and we will actually start killing our roots.
Yes. I think that what I have found with most, especially people with things in pots or indoors, The most of the time when they kill them is from too much water.
Too much water. It pushes the oxygen out.
Yes, and soggy roots will rot,
right.
Whether
right.
they're in the ground or in the pot, right. very definitely.
So in the afternoon, when you see that occurring, feel the soil first. Stick a pencil in, stick your finger in, do something to feel the soil. If it's still moist, don't water a second time.
Don't panic, in other words.
Right. Water always in the morning.
Okay.
After the sun goes down, the grass will open its blades. All your wilted plants will, you know, perk right back up.
So that's
a wonderful thing to see.
That's another reason why we water in the morning, because it just helps the plant overall.
It sure does.
Okay, well, we're going to be going to a break in just a moment, but Dottie will be back after the break to talk about this. If you have a question for Dottie or me on mulch or the transpiration, we've thrown all sorts of words at you, give us a call at 800-949-5973. And remember, we have a drawing for the ticket to the concert in the gardens and one of my cookbooks. Welcome back to At Home with Herbs. This is Anne McCormick, the Urban Cowgirl here, and I have my guest, Dottie Woodson, from the AgriLife Extension Service through Texas A&M. And Dottie and I have been talking about summer and mulch, and we have a caller who has a question for Dottie. Why don't we go ahead and talk about the best kind of mulches to use while I figure out what I'm doing wrong. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, there are all kinds of mulches out there on the market, and they all have their good benefits and good qualities. So I don't think it really matters so much what type of mulch you use. I think it very much matters that you use mulch to get all the benefits of the mulch holding water in the soil, of mulch reducing the heat in the summer and the cold in the winter. And another thing mulch does is it covers our clay soil. It prevents the clay soil from getting that crusty feel as it dries out. And so mulch actually helps the soil absorb water at a faster rate than bare soil does. So it really, really helps that way. Now, as far as the benefits of each of the kind of mulch, we have hardwood mulch that is available at all garden centers in bags. We have cypress mulch, we have pine bark mulch, and cedar mulch, all kinds of benefits of each one of these. Now, one of the things I'll say about all of these is, you know, the look that they have in the garden for you and the time that they decompose. And so I actually prefer pine bark mulch for two reasons. One reason is it's a byproduct of a Texas industry, and a lot of the cypress mulch and some of the other mulches are sent in from other states, which is fine. We need to support all parts of agriculture. Also, did you have the caller on air?
Yes, I think we've managed to get the caller on the air. Alan from Fort Worth, you're on the air. Sorry we couldn't get you on there for a moment. I think I didn't push the right button or something. Alan?
Yes, hi. I was trying to find out for the herb garden, what's the best kind of mulch to put on that, since they're fairly fragile. You don't want to put something too heavy, and I'm wondering if this is the right time of the year to put it on.
Yes, this is definitely the right time of year to put mulch on, and always keep a mulch layer on winter, summer, spring, and fall, actually. But yes, if you don't have a mulch layer on, one thing I always say about mulch, it's like icing on the cake. And Anne's a baker, so
yes,
she knows exactly what I'm saying. We put icing on the cake so the cake doesn't dry out while it's sitting there on the counter or sitting in the refrigerator, and that helps keep the cake moist. And that's what mulch does, too. It helps keep that soil moist for a longer period of time, and you can actually go longer between irrigations, or hopefully we'll have lots of good rain this summer also. But the kind of mulch, I use pine bark mulch because it's a byproduct of the Texas industry, our forest industry in East Texas. It is lightweight. If it's near a sidewalk, it does have a tendency to float if your garden's a little bit above the sidewalk. Some of the other mulches, like cypress mulch, it compacts very good tightly together. It's great for your walkways or anywhere near a sidewalk where you don't want it to float off. Cedar mulch has a little bit of a quality where it keeps insects away. It's like acts like an insect repellent. Not all plants love cedar mulch, but it is also part of the byproduct of a Texas industry. And then we have our hardwood mulch. hardwood mulches are wood chips from tree from arborists locally that have those. You can buy these all in bags at your local garden centers or feed stores, or you can buy them in bulk from some of the material places around town. Or rock yards around town also carry
mulch. Dottie, do we have some of the municipalities that have mulch recycled from, say, the tree services that they have out there maintaining the public trees?
Many of our cities are doing that. I know Fort Worth does that, and they put the mulch out where people can come and get it over by Tarrant County College South Campus by their tree farm. They put it out in the soccer field parking lot. Everyone's going to have to call their own cities and find out if that's available, either in bulk like that or by the bag.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your call, Alan. We'll check to see if we have any other calls in a moment or two, but let's get back to the mulch, Dottie. Now, I've heard about mulches that sometimes people use that are artificial mulches.
Right.
What are some other things that sometimes people use?
Right, and then also there have mulches on the market that are dyed a color.
Yeah.
They also have some mulches on the market now that have a fragrance in them for some reason. They've added that into them. They also have mulches on the market now that actually have insecticides in them. So you have to be pretty careful when you're buying your mulch and make sure that you read the label and you're getting exactly what you want.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the advantages of mulch is that it is an organic material and that it'll break down eventually, and therefore we have to replenish it all the time. I think you mulch about twice a year in the spring and in the fall to protect, you know, your plants. But the other thing I think we look at is that it does break down. And as it breaks down, it becomes compost. And that compost even further breaks down into the nutrients
that's
that the plants
so
need.
So it eventually feeds the soil.
Exactly. So
which is a good thing.
Recommend, you know, the
organic
natural
mulch.
Or
yeah.
organic mulches because of that.
Well, now, what do you think about those that would have like an insecticide in them? That kind of gives me pause.
That makes me nervous too, because of course I have two grandchildren who might be sticking things in their mouths, and maybe I don't want an insecticide in my bark mulch. So, you know, it's just one option that you have when you go to the garden center to select that.
Most insecticides like that would be broad spectrum so that they would kill the harmful as well as the beneficial insects.
That could happen.
So that's
Yeah, you need to read the label and find out. If you don't want an insecticide in it, you don't buy those kind. Cedar mulch does have a repellent quality to it. I don't think it actually kills the insects, but it has a repelling quality. Many of us might remember, you know, cedar chest and cedar closets that people, you know, have.
Some
in
woods
order,
are not, yes.
You know, to store their woolens in or their linens in or their silks in to keep our clothes pest away. And so that's, you know, that's something we think of as a repellent. It doesn't kill the insects, it repels them.
That would. Well, you mentioned a moment ago mulches of different colors. I was doing research, actually, not that long ago on basil, and came across an article where people had actually done a test to see if the different colors of mulch would affect the growth of the plant.
Mm-hmm. And what did they find?
They actually found that it did.
Okay. The darker mulch or the lighter mulch?
It actually had to do with I think in the case of basil, as I recall, I think like red-colored mulch was particularly good.
Isn't that interesting?
For the flavor. Yes. I thought it was.
That is very interesting.
I was just like, who would have thought of that?
Yeah.
You know, somebody lying awake at night thinking, gee, let's try this.
Yeah. Well, you know, mulches are usually the byproduct of some other industry.
Yeah,
you know, that's
true.
Where we get the rice hulls and the cotton burrs, and you know, we get
the coconut,
the cedar and cypress and coconut, all kinds of things are byproducts. And then you can enhance those with coloring. But one of the things that you look at for mulch is to moderate the soil temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And the darker mulches, if you use those in the winter, are going to keep your soil warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And the lighter mulches, if you use those in the summer, are going to keep your soil cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So think in terms of light and dark colored mulches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've seen that red mulch, and I'm not sure I think it looks super, super attractive, but some people absolutely love it. And I think that's a little bit in the eye of the beholder.
That could be, just like we have different fashions in our clothes.
Yes, exactly. And there's also a newspaper product that is being sold as a mulch. And those are color enhanced also. Mm-hmm. It's chipped up newspaper that's stuck together, you know, with something. And, and that has different colors. Now, the fragrance thing, I don't know about that. I haven't tried any
perfume
of those.
For the soil? I don't know.
But, you know, I'm an orchid grower, and I will share with you that one time someone gave me a bag of vanilla mulch. It's just a little tiny, tiny bag, maybe 2 pounds of it. Just think how valuable that is. And the vanilla beans are chopped up, and the vanilla is extracted from the beans. And so that is actually a byproduct of vanilla extraction.
And
it smells so good, but I cannot imagine being able to afford to use much of that.
Yeah, unless you live near where the vanilla is growing. Yeah, because actually vanilla is a bean pod of a member of the orchid family.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes.
Vanilla passiflora.
That must have really smelled interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're just about ready to take a break. Dottie will hang around for a few minutes if anybody wants to give her a call in at 800-949-5973. We'll be back after the break and to see you then. Welcome back to At Home with Herbs. And we're here with Dottie Woodson talking about all things herbal, including mulch and other things. I just want to remind you that anyone who calls in is eligible for the drawing. We have a pair of tickets to the concert in the gardens at the Fort Worth Botanic Gardens, or a copy of my cookbook, The Urban Cowgirl Bakes. And we have a caller on the line, Bob from Keller. You're on the air. I think you have a question for Dottie.
Yes, I do. I'm experiencing in my flower garden, I'm experiencing nut grass, quite a bit of that, and some Johnson grass. I put stuff on called Image, but I haven't seen it work yet. It's been in there about a week and a half. I don't know if that's one of the solutions or not. And the other thing has to do with my grass. I have 10 systems and it costs an awful lot of money to water my lawn, and I was wondering what process I should use. I don't want it to die, but I just don't want it to have to be the greenest lawn in town at that expense. So maybe you can help me.
Oh, I understand. Well, first let's cover the nut sedge thing. Nut sedge is a type of plant called a sedge, and it grows by underground runner, and also it blooms and puts out a seed head. So the first thing you do is never let it go to seed so it cannot spread that way. Then the other thing is that you can actually go in there and dig up those plants. But when you start doing that, you'll notice they're called nut sedge because at the base of each one of those plants, there's a little nutlet type bulb-like thing, and you have to get that up. If you pull just the blades off, you're actually probably propagating it more than you're controlling it. Then off of that little nut-like organism, you will see a almost white root-like structure that will pop up and grow the next plant and the next plant and the next plant like that. You have to get all of that structure out of the ground also. So if it's a really, really bad problem, you know, you're probably going to get very frustrated digging that out because it'll keep coming up with every little bit that you leave down there. Image and Manage, they're two different herbicides, are labeled to control nut sedge, but you need to read the label very, very carefully. Usually takes about 3 applications, and whereas most herbicides are mild acid and burn the top of the plants off, say something like vinegar or orange oil burn off Roundup, those are acids, and they burn the plant. What this does, it needs to be watered into the soil so it'll get down to that little nutlet and that rhizome, that white structure that goes from plant to plant. And so usually it takes 3 applications. So please go back to the pesticide, the herbicide, and read the label very carefully and try to follow those directions. If it's very, very little in your garden, it's better to just dig it all up and keep digging it up till you get rid of it. Now, as far as watering your lawn, yes, I know it's very, very expensive. So the first thing you need to do is to use your irrigation water as efficiently as possible. And what that means, it actually means checking your irrigation system to make sure it's working. Most of us have spray pop-up heads or spray pop-up rotors. And what we have to do is we have to make sure that they're popping up properly and they're not stopped up in any way, so the water is being evenly distributed throughout our landscape. So what you need to do is run your sprinkler system during the day when you can be there to watch it. And it only takes a little bit at each station to make sure. You actually go and look at each head. You make sure that it's popping up. And then you make sure that the water coming out of the pop-up head is actually running the way it should. So if it should run at a quarter circle or a full circle or half circle, you make sure, because our water has a lot of calcium in it, it's very easy to get those pop-ups stopped up with calcium from our water or soil from the action of popping up and down. Sometimes it's just a matter of cleaning it out, something like a paper clip. You could clean it out real easy, or sometimes you need to unscrew it. And if you unscrew it, you'll see there's a little filter in there. Maybe that's full of calcium and soil, and you need to rinse that out and screw that back on there. It's a real thing. It's what we call an irrigation checkup. A lot of times, if your irrigation system is not working properly, what happens? Some areas are getting way too wet, and some areas are not getting wet enough. And so then you have a tendency to run your irrigation longer in order to get those non-wet areas wet enough. But an irrigation system is designed for what we call even distribution of the water. And so it should be getting the entire lawn area wet. The other thing that prevents a lawn from doing well in the heat of the summer is compacted soil. If you have a lot of activity on your lawn, you know, kids out there playing, your dog's out there playing a lot, the soil can get very compacted. And so aerating the soil by dragging an aerator across of it, which you can rent at any rental store that rents gardening supplies, helps a great deal. Another thing that helps a great deal is putting about a half of an inch of compost on your lawn. I say a half an inch because most lawns are probably a half inch. The grass blades are about a half inch tall, or maybe even an inch and an inch and a half. And so if you put a half inch of compost on your lawn, just buy bags of it or buy it in bulk and start raking that back and forth and getting it very evenly distributed throughout your lawn, that sort of acts like a mulch. And it breaks the surface tension of the clay soil so the water is absorbed better. It also introduces all kinds of nutrients in for the roots and in for the microorganisms that help those roots absorb the nutrients and water.
That's an interesting technique, Dottie. It's something that when I lived in the East Coast, it was done much more commonly. In fact, when I came here to Texas, we had a poorly conditioned lawn, and that was one of the first things I did after we got the lawn sprinkler set up. And I could not find the tool that I needed actually to spread mulch out onto the lawn. There's something that's like a big
roller mulch ball. Spreader, right? And yeah. they're not around as much as they need to be. Like a big caged roller.
Yeah.
And you might be able to rent those same place you could rent an aerator, but if not, a rake works fine.
Yeah, it really does. And that's what we wound up having to do because we couldn't find the mulch spreaders that we were familiar with from the East Coast.
And then also do the don't bag it program. Don't bag your grass clippings unless you need that nitrogen source for your compost bin. I know every couple of mowings I collect the grass clippings and put in my compost bin. But leave your grass clippings on the ground and they decompose and become that mulch and becomes that organic matter that helps with that water absorption. It breaks that surface tension of the clay.
Yeah, well, thanks for your call, Bob, about the lawn. I wanted to add a comment as a herb gardener. Some herbs also are not happy with lawn sprinklers. That's one of the, you know, you were talking about even distribution of the lawn. That's true. But if you've got that going over into your garden, some of those plants might not necessarily be very happy with that. Garden sage, some of the grayer plants definitely are not going to be happy. They're more likely to get spider mites and a kind of fungal disease from that. Mm-hmm.
They're very xeric, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and lavender.
Lavender. Oh, you can overwater lavender so easy. It's amazing.
Yeah, I have been amazed at that. When I moved from the East Coast. Yeah. And the drainage and the sprinkler system, because I was used to using sprinklers quite a bit in the East Coast because it wasn't so much of a problem here. I moved here, and my goodness, I was killing things right and left.
Well, the soil in the East Coast has a lot more organic matter in it.
That's true, too.
If we really look at our natural soil here, it only has about 0.3 parts, you know, or percentage organic matter. In East Texas, East Coast, some of those areas will have 5% organic matter in the soil naturally. So it makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, it wouldn't make
how it drains, how it absorbs water, how it holds water, and how it holds nutrients.
So mulch in many ways is really the thing, because not only does it protect the roots, protect the plant, keep the moisture in, but eventually it will feed the soil.
Exactly.
And when you dig things up, when you transplant or put in new annuals and things, you mix that down into the soil, and gradually you
get a good organic matter.
Eventually, yes, you'll get a good soil. And that's something we all certainly love. Well, Dottie, thanks very much for coming in. I look forward to having you again sometime.
Well, thank you, Ann. I think this show is going to be super, and I really think that it's a service to our community. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Thanks for being with us today. Dustin Briscoe was our engineer, and Janice Bunting was our call screener. And this is Ann McCormick, the Urban Cowgirl, saying happy herbing.